Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. You are listening to the Dom and Colin podcast. My name is Colin, and I'm here with Dom. Dom, how are you today?
I'm doing okay. How are you?
I'm doing quite well. And actually, what we have for everyone today is a bonus episode. It has been just about a year that we've been doing this. And to commemorate, today we are going to be talking with poker superstar Daniel Negreanu. And I know not everyone listening may be familiar with Daniel, and I'm sure there are some people who are listening who are not familiar with Survivor, but are familiar with Daniel. For those unfamiliar with Daniel, he's probably the most recognizable poker player in the world, and he's also one of the most vocal, and he's a great interview guest and talker, and we thought it'd be excellent to have him on the show, because we see him from time to time doing his weekly rants on fullcontactpoker.com, and Survivor would come up. And so, yeah, we wanted to get Daniel in here, and I know Dom's going to tell you a little bit more about him, because there's another Survivor connection also.
Yeah, sure. It's not like we just picked a random celebrity to approach to have on the show. Daniel's been a Survivor fan for a long time. He was actually approached to be on the show by the producers for Survivor China, but Jean-Robert Blonde ended up taking his spot. He's also very good friends with Boston Rob, who, as I'm sure you're aware, is a very big figure in the Survivor world. So he had some unique insights on all those topics. So, yeah, we wanted to have him on to talk about that, and I think he's livid. It was good fun, even though it's a shorter segment than maybe we're used to.
Yeah, absolutely. And what we ended up talking to him about are some of the key fundamentals that we were wondering about what he thinks are like the keys to Survivor, basically. And then being asked to be on the show himself, we got some of his thoughts on the current season all the way through the RC episode. Last night's episode hadn't aired yet, but still plenty to talk about there. And then, like Dom mentioned, we got some of his thoughts on Boston Rob.
Yeah, you don't get to be as successful as Daniel has been in poker without a good understanding of making rational decisions and thinking things through, and also without a thorough understanding of human psychology. So Daniel really kind of brought both of those things to bear on the views he gave this episode.
Absolutely, and I think Daniel was fantastic. So guys, we're going to send it to the interview now. Enjoy. Hey, so here we are, and here with us is Daniel Negreanu. Daniel, how are you?
I'm doing great, guys. How you doing?
We're doing very well. Now, the way this all came about is Daniel does weekly rants over at fullcontactpoker.com, and Survivor would come up from time to time, and so we thought it would be great to have you, Daniel, on the show to get your full take on things. So thank you very much for taking the time today.
Not a problem. I'm a fan of poker, but a bigger fan of Survivor.
That's very good to hear. Now, today we're going to be talking about Survivor Philippines, but before that, we have a couple other general questions for you before we talk about this season specifically, if that's cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what made you a fan of the show in the first place?
Well, I think, we didn't really understand it. I'm not really an outdoorsy guy. I could kind of care less about all that stuff. But the aspect of competition and the outwit part is what really hits home for me, being a poker player. And part of what I do for a living is to size people up, figure out what kind of people they are, and then proceed with a strategy to take advantage of them at the table. But Survivor is like a version of poker in a lot of that. You know, and if you notice, the players who do the best in Survivor, it's rarely because they're simply the strongest physically or the nicest. It's usually because they make really solid decisions when, you know, big moves happen.
Absolutely. Now, actually, the next thing I want to ask you is, what's something you're looking for in, like, a good player when you're watching the show?
Well, you know, when I look at somebody being a good player, I look at someone who's first and foremost is likable. You know, one of the keys to the game that, you know, a guy like Russell, for example, just never understood and was, you know, bitter about it, is that part of the game is you have to sort of play strategic throughout the game, but then in the end, you have to do it in such a way that's honorable to a certain degree and maintain your integrity so that people will actually vote for you and say, you know what, I respect it, I respect the way you played the game. So first and foremost, somebody who understands both sides of, yes, you have to, you know, at certain points kind of blindside people and things like that, but you want to make sure that you understand that in the end, they're going to have to like you more than the other person sitting across from you. Otherwise, you're not going to win.
Now, as we understand it, you're actually invited to be on the show yourself. The producers were aware that you were a big fan, and they were looking for a poker player to be on the show, so they invited you. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, there's a little funny story behind that. Yeah, they, you know, there was an inquiry to my agent about it, and I obviously would have loved to do it. It occurred to Survivor China, and it happened at the same time as the World Series of Poker, so, you know, it really wasn't a choice for me. However, there was a poker player on there named Jean-Robert Blonde, and Jean-Robert came to me the night before he was leaving. He says, hey, man, I know you're a big fan of the game. Can you give me a piece of advice on, like, what to do out there? So I gave him three pieces of advice. I said, Jean, first of all, make sure the women like you. Second of all, make sure that you don't call anyone out on the show very early. And thirdly, be careful not to speak loudly in open areas, okay? So he's like, yep, I'm all for it. I watched the very first episode. He was in the middle of the water yelling and screaming about how he's going to bang one of these girls in the butt. And then how the eventual winner, he calls him out and says, you seem like the smart, shady guy. So essentially the entire game plan I gave him, he just destroyed it on day one.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Dom.
Yeah, knowing what you did about John LeBert, how well were you expecting him to do when you learned that he was going out there?
Well, no, I really didn't think John LeBert was going to do very well. I tried to explain to him, though. I said, because you're a big guy, you're safe in the early going, so just don't be controversial, right? Just kind of go through the motions, hang in there, you know, be likable, make sure that the women are not annoyed by you. He just couldn't help himself. And it was funny because I spoke to him after, and he's like, yeah, I went with a different strategy, like, to be kind of an asshole and lazy. And I'm thinking, okay, interesting. You know, whatever works for you, but I just, you know, it didn't add up for me. I think if I had his, you know, physique in a situation like that, I would have advised him to be a lot more agreeable.
What did you make of his, like, ambassadorship as a member of the poker community on the show?
Well, I would say that, you know, he's an interesting guy. You know, and I think one of the things you do when you cast the show is you want somebody who's going to be interesting. He spoke Chinese, you know, he was controversial to a certain degree. Is he the cleanest, most respectable representative of our community? Of course not. Was he the smartest and, you know, best at strategy? No, but he was interesting enough, and I thought from that perspective, you know, people could be interested in what he does and poker in general.
Interesting. I'm curious. When you're watching the show yourself, are you viewing it primarily as like a TV show for entertainment or as a game?
Oh, a little combination of both, but mostly as a game. I really enjoy the drama. You know, I look forward to the points, you know, in the later stages when there's maybe seven left and there has to be a shift because, you know, you've got three people together and you got three on the other side and you got one person in the middle who essentially all of a sudden has all the power. And I find that dynamic to be really, really interesting. And so, you know, what people do and what they choose to do, all the drama surrounding that, you know, and I'm a reality fan in general, but there's that and just the strategy and listening to what some people think and I'm like, oh, you idiot. How do you not get this? It's ABC. So, yeah, I love living through it vicariously.
Mm-hmm. Would you ever consider actually playing in the future if they asked you again?
Of course, yeah. I mean, I feel like I'd have a lot going for me in terms of the game because I'm friendly with pretty good friends with Boston Rob, and I've always seen him as to be one of the best Survivor players of all time, and I was so proud of him when he absolutely dominated the last season that he won. I mean,
sure, yeah.
I don't know if anyone can argue that that wasn't just completely it was like in Tribal. The other two people were basically speaking out on his behalf. It's like he didn't have to say anything. They're like, yeah, well, you know, I'm over here because Rob allowed me to be here. Okay. Yeah, you know, whatever you say. So I think I would have the training from Rob in terms of the physical regime that I'd need to be in. Because I think that was my biggest obstacle is physically. I'm pretty weak and spoiled. I stay in five-star hotels with nice, cushy pillows. You know, I'm a little spoiled in that regard, but I think I would, you know, I would take it very, very seriously. I would learn how to make fire before I went, learn how to make shelters. I would, you know, practice within the land. I'm a vegan also. I don't eat any meat or fish or anything. So even going into it a month before, I would start eating that stuff just so I could, you know, keep my system, you know, because I get too sick. If you're a vegan and then you all of a sudden just eat a piece of fish, you're going to get really, really violently ill. So if I was going to do it, it would be a huge commitment. And, you know. But I would definitely think that I'd have a really good chance to win.
How old do you think poker players in general would do on the show? Because we're 9 years after Moneymaker now. It seems like some of the stigma which surrounded poker has maybe gone away a bit. And yet, when you hear that someone's a professional poker player, there are still maybe some connotations associated with that. You think, oh, if they win the money, then they're going to fritter it away, or maybe they don't need the money as much. So do you think that would be a consideration for people out there?
Well, that would be, absolutely. I think the one thing that you have to think is that it's really a disadvantage if they all know you're a poker player, right? So if you're a famous poker player, you're going in there with a disadvantage of the fact that people are going to think you're lying because they think poker is bluffing. You know, they're going to think you're a shady human being to some degree. But most importantly, like you said, that you already have the money. So one of the things you have to do, like, for example, what Jimmy Johnson, the coach of, you know, the football coach, what he did was he let people know, he's like, I'm here to just be part of the team, guys. Whatever you need me to do, I'll do. And you know I can't win. Because in the end, no one's going to vote for me, right? So that's one way to convince people that you're a good, you know, sometimes having somebody on there that everybody hates is a good guy to keep around you, because if you take him to the end, he cannot win, which helps your chances, right? Well, I could say, my argument would be this. You guys should keep me around, because in the end, nobody's going to give me the money, because they already know I have the money. I do have a plan for that. I don't know if I should divulge it here, but I do have a really good plan for how I would get past that, but I wouldn't share it with them.
Okay, and I suppose you can't share it with us. I wouldn't. I feel like it wouldn't be the savvy move on your part, just in case you do end up out there. So, yeah, maybe once you're done playing, you can come. We'll see it in action.
Well, put it this way. I have a move that if I make it to tribal, in the end, there's just no way they can't vote for me. There's no way. But
oh,
I'll
wow.
leave it at that.
Okay.
I'll just leave it at that. Okay.
Well, now I got to see you play.
So, we've seen a lot of the people who are kind of in the public domain now, people like Jeff Kent and Lisa Welchel, take a kind of different tack where they just, either they don't make a big deal of their celebrity or they hope and assume that people won't know who they are. Now, John LeBaire's, yeah, he's a big character, but people outside the poker world maybe wouldn't know who he is. So if he had wanted to, he may could have got away with not being recognized. Whereas with you, it seems like if you had gone out there, then there was just no hope of that. Like someone would have paid you right away.
Right. No, I already thought of that. Actually, I thought John LeBaire would make a mistake to say he was a poker player. For me, I think it would be a mistake to lie about who I am, just because I think if you've got 18 people and they're all into Survivor, there's a lot of crossover between Survivor and poker, because it's, you know, it's a strategy game. And it'd be very likely that someone on the show, at least a couple, will know who I am. So if I start off by hiding that, right off the bat, I'm being seen as being shady. So I wouldn't do that. I would be honest. And again, my hook is, and my simple hook is this, guys, listen, I'm not the weakest here. I can help you guys around camp. You know, I'll do the best I can in the challenges, and I won't be one of the weakest links. But most importantly, at the merge, you guys should keep me, because I can't win. Literally, all I can do is help you, and I can be the scapegoat for all the sort of, you know, when you want to like make a move and we want to like blindside, you can just blame it on me. So just keep me, because just keep me around, because I'm not a threat at all.
Yeah, but what do you make of this trend recently of casting some more well-known people on the show? Because it seems like the original premise of the show is you have strangers from all walks of life who've never met each other before coming together and having to, you know, coexist peacefully. And now, yeah, if you introduce well-known people, in fact, it creates a new kind of interesting dynamic. So do you think that kind of violates the premise of the show, or does it improve it in some ways?
No, I like it. I mean, first of all, you got to think about the fact the show's been, you know, we're 20-something seasons in, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's understandable that they're going to try and do things to keep it fresh and to, you know, to maintain the audience. And I think having famous people on there that are willing to go on there brings in potentially like a new audience that might not have watched in the past, you know. So fans of Jimmy Johnson may say, oh my gosh, I love Jimmy Johnson, you know, I'm going to watch him on the show because they're interested in him specifically. So, and I think that's part of why they bring back returning cast members, like, for example, a Boston Rob or a Russell, because they were great ratings and they were great for the show. So I don't think it takes anything away from the original premise. It adds a new dynamic, because now you have the dynamic of some people like this season, Jeff Kent, saying, you know, we got to get rid of Johnson. We don't want a returning player winning, you know. Mm-hmm. And then other people saying, you know, if you're a celebrity, they want to get rid of you, you know, because you don't need the money and things like that. So it just adds even more sophistication to the whole process and, you know, more variables in terms of why people do what they're going to do.
Well, let's move in now, actually, to season 25. We just had, I think, a very interesting merge go down, perhaps the most interesting merge maybe ever. What are your thoughts about this now that we have so many different kind of voting blocks potentially?
Well, Alfred, I tweeted out at the end of the show that this was just one of the dumbest moves I've seen. I mean, there's been some epically stupid moves over 25 seasons, but at this stage in the game, this was just wholeheartedly one of the dumbest moves by the four. You know, anytime you come into a merge and there's a group of seven and there's a group of four, and two of the members from the group of seven are saying, hey, guys, we want you to win. You just say simply this. You say, okay, that's it. If you have two members of the opposing tribe willing to jump ship, you have them by the balls. Because first of all, now you have 6-5, and you can vote that way. And in the end, you know, you can maintain your four and get rid of the other two. They can stay at the bottom of the totem pole. So essentially, they're handing over victory. They're handing over all the power to you, and you're choosing to try to make your road so much more difficult by jumping through hoops and hoping you can crack into the seven. And it was just shake my foot in my head. I'm like, what are you people thinking? This makes no sense.
And so what are you thinking about moving forward here? Do you see perhaps any now kind of like some justification for Jeff Kent doing this?
One thing that you can say that's obvious about whatever the seven that came in with the four is that there's no real strong alliance at this point that is unbreakable. I think that there isn't a clear four or five that is willing to stick together through to the end. And I think Jeff is probably hoping that he, it was interesting that at the merge, they seemed to get along better than they probably should have, where, you know, in typical seasons, you have one team against the other and they don't discuss strategy so freely together. You know, it's me against you. However, in this case, Jeff seems to have kind of like got his way in with some of the others, and it seems like the lines are not clearly divided between two groups. They're just still thinking in terms of like, oh, you know what? We just want to get rid of that guy, and not thinking in the bigger picture, like, who does that guy represent? What part of what alliance is he in? And does it make sense to keep him, or should we, you know, they're not thinking in terms of numbers, which is what they should be thinking at Emerge, and that's all that matters. And I think sporadically, like, a lot of the cast members are just losing track of the number one goal, which is to maintain numbers.
You're someone who, in your profession, has to make a constant stream of decisions based on a number of variables. You have to analyze it in a very cold, rational way. And I think a lot of people who go out there aren't necessarily used to doing that. So if you're out there and you're faced with having to make some of these judgment calls, how do you go about doing that? What's the process you use to reach your conclusion?
First thing, the reason I said to Jean Robert when he went on the show that make sure the women like you, because if you notice what Boston Rob did, I mean, in the first time he actually, you know, married the woman that sort of quote-unquote, you know, you can say rode his coattails a little bit. But even in the last season, he had two of the women who wanted to be led, essentially, and they wanted to be under his arms. So essentially, he had a voting block built in because they would do what he wanted them to do. And I think it's important in a game to do that. And I think that I would be vocal about explaining in a non-confrontational way what needs to happen going forward and really paint the picture for that player. And sort of for some of the people that, let's say they don't really understand how the strategy works, I explain to them what will happen if they choose A or B. And I'll give them the choice, and I'll make it very clear which one's better for them. But, you know, so essentially what that does is they feel like they made the choice when realistically I manipulated them to make the choice I wanted them to make.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So how do you think in season 25 now, what do you think it's going to end up playing out here long term? Do you have like a winner pick yet, or is it too soon to call it?
Yeah, you know, it's definitely too soon to call it, and there's so many variables at this point. And the funny thing is when I watch these shows, and I watch them all, I'm so good with faces, and I remember, but when it comes to names, I so forget. You know, I know, oh, the hot blonde girl, she got voted out early, I don't know her name, but I like her. you know, I know Jeff Kent from the name, and John, and I really am so weak with the names, but, and again, at this point, there doesn't seem to be anyone that's clearly, the guy that was in the tribe that broke down, what was his name?
Malcolm.
Malcolm's in a very, very good position, I think, at this point. And if they don't nip that in the butt, and if they're not careful, he is right now clearly the most likable. He's hurt the least amount of people, and he's done a good job of sort of infiltrating this tribe and kind of flying under the radar at the same time, despite the fact that he's such a large physical threat and from a likability standpoint. My question to him, I guess what I would say is, I don't know that he's cutthroat enough to finish in the end game. So unless he actually just physically dominates late, I think that when you get down to five or four, they're going to cut his neck off. At least they should, because he's going to win if he makes the final. If he made it to tribal, I just don't see how he wouldn't win against most people. And also the other for Denise, I believe.
Yeah, definitely. You mentioned your relationship with Boston Rob a bit. Can you go into that, like the history between you two?
I love this guy. I mean, I actually did a reality show with him a long time ago, you know, Rob and Amber Against All Odds. It just like the fun show where he was trying to become a professional poker player. And I've learned to admire Rob for different reasons. Like on the show, people could say what they want about what he did, and I think it was honorable. I know that Lex still doesn't talk to him from All Stars, but he, you know, he couldn't help him, and he was honest with him, and he told him at the spot. What did he do? He stuck by who? He stuck by Amber, which is the original alliance, and he's raised three daughters, and he's been a good man, and he's a better man today than he's ever been. He's like an amazing father, like a super genuinely good guy. And he plays the game with integrity. He understands, you know, you're going to have to chop people's heads off at times, but it's a game. And he's a guy, and I told him this very early on when we became friends, was that, you know, I see what you've done in the game, and I see those things, but I trust you completely in life. And I mean that. I think he's, like, just really like a solid all-around, caring, you know, positive, intelligent individual.
Yeah, I think a lot of people forget that too often, to separate what happens in the game from what happens outside of it. But, yeah, how did you two become friends originally then? Was it through poker or something else?
It was funny, though. Well, the first time he said he was doing, this was right after, like, the him and Amber were on All Stars, and he'd been an appearance at a poker event. And then in Costa Rica, we were both at the same kind of appearance. And, you know, we got raided by the Federalty or whatever in Costa Rica. And we were stuck on this compound at this guy Calvin Ayres' house. And so we were kind of stuck there, and we were in, like, the gym workout room, and we just got to talking a little bit. And at the time when I first met him, I'd not seen the show. I hadn't seen Survivor at the time, so I didn't even know who he was. It wasn't until later that I actually watched that episode. We became friends first. He was friends with Josh Area, another poker player. And then, you know, I had dinner with him one night with Josh in L.A., and then I didn't know. Still at the time, I hadn't seen All-Stars. And then I watched All-Stars, and I was like, I texted him, like, you're the man. This was awesome, you know? So I had all this stuff I didn't even know about him, because he's very humble, and, you know, he's not braggadocious at all, and he just, you know, he was just like a regular, oh, you're on a show? Cool. You know, I didn't, you know, he was Boston Rob of Survivor. He was just some regular dude to me.
Yeah, that's very cool. Daniel, we don't want to take up too much of your time. I don't think we have any other questions for you. Is there anything you want to be plugging for our listeners?
Well, I guess, you know, the one thing, if anybody does want to play poker, I do have a website where I do teach, and it's called pokervt.com, stands for virtual training. And whether you're a complete beginner, or, you know, you've got some skills or something there for you. You know, as far as, like, if you ever go on Survivor, those three little words of advice, I think they're pretty solid. John Robert didn't listen, and look what happened to him. So I'll leave you with that.
Okay. Hey, thank you very much for taking the time, my friend.
You're welcome. It's good talking to you.